Greetings from Podcastville. The Church of What's Happened Now is brought to you by Fuji Sports. Listen, if you're looking for a gi, shin guards, Muay Thai pads, a fucking mouthpiece, a helmet, because you can't take it no more, FujiSports.com is where you get. They deliver right to your house. Like I said, Fuji's been around since Joey Facamato's been around. So that means forever. They're guaranteed. The gis, I get pulled on. I got cut yesterday. Lee was there. Fucking gis are tremendous. Go to FujiSports.com and press in.
Church.
Bam! And get 10% off delivered to your house. Man, if you're working out, you need supplements. So you might as well go to Honor and get the fucking party started. Start with Alpha Brain. If that don't get you, listen, two Alpha Brains, a fucking edible, and a cup of coffee in the morning, you're a fucking wizard. You look into the future. You understand me? You hear, you get fucking messages from North Korea. You know when the bomb is coming. That's what Alpha Brain does. And if it don't work, it's 100% money back guarantee. Go to Honor.com and press in.
Church.
Bam! And get 10% off delivered to your house. It's 10% day today. Kick that fucking mule, Lee. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Are you fucking kidding me or what? May 23rd.
Girl, you really got me now. You got me so I don't know what
the Church of What's Happening Now.
Girl, you really got
Thursday morning.
You got me so I can't sleep at night. Girl, you really got me now. You got me so I don't know.
10 days to D-Day. Oh, shit.
You really got me. Oh, you really got me.
What's happening, you bad motherfuckers? Uncle Joey on a Wednesday afternoon. I got my main man, Ed Quinn, in the motherfucking house. I got the Christ Killer, the original, Lee Syatt, and I got Keechee, the guest, fucking breaking hearts, knocking people out, sexually harassing people, just walking around and shit like that. Just sexually harassing men. Men just fold. They fall over when they see Keisha. What's happened, Mr. Quinn?
Oh, it's always so good to see you,
great
man.
Great to see you.
Yeah,
man.
It's been too long.
When did we shoot that fucking thing? God, whatever happened with that? Whatever happened with those people?
You and I were basically going to reinvent television. We were before Netflix. We were just so far ahead of the curve. We didn't know. See, we didn't have Alpha Brain back then. We couldn't see the future. But that was it. When was that? Was that like 10 years ago? It's got to have been like 2007.
It was a strike.
2000.
It was during the strike.
Ah, that's right. 2000. So I think that would have been like 2007, 2008. And yeah, we did this. It was like, an online pilot. But the guys behind Law and Order were creeping on it. And they were going to try and do, it was basically like Law and Order for your phone or some shit like that.
Something creepy. But it was a fun day. We got to meet. We talked about the UFC.
Yep.
And then I see you popping up on fucking True Blood. I see you popping up on Slinging Dick on Two Broke Girls. You know, now you're on a Cuban show.
Yeah, that's amazing. Very true. I know, that's right.
It's actually fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, it's things have been all right, man. Just been grinding out. But, it's just like nothing different than what we were doing back then. It's just trying to stay in the game and always trying to, before all those comedies, I was doing all kinds of weird like sci-fi and stuff like that. And you just... It's amazing how in this business, if you hang in there long enough, your career just takes these different weird. Now I'm doing a whole bunch of unscripted stuff for Discovery, and it's just, I don't know, man. You just hustle.
It's really a journey, and I've said it on the show before. When you commit, the universe will take care of you.
Yeah.
And it knows when you need. You know, as a comic, I remember not knowing how you were going to pay rent, and it's the 22nd.
Yeah.
Not having an idea. You're 8 days away from D-Day, and you have no fucking idea. I still remember hanging outside of Kmart, waiting for people to drop their receipts. And I would pick up the receipt, go in the store, and get the same item they bought, and I get the $36 or the $50. Like, you have no fucking idea. Like, as a starving comic, you have all these options, and that's all the options. And I remember one day I picked up a receipt for a $400 lawnmower. And I went in there, and they didn't have the lawnmower. I'm like, fuck. So I had to drive to Longmont, Colorado to Kmart. And I walked in, I had the guy even pick it up, pick that up, put it on the thing. I gave him like $5. I go, pick it up, put it on the sled.
Wait, so you'd have the receipt and then you'd give him the receipt?
And then I go into the store with the receipt and I just take something off the shelf.
Yeah.
This was way before cameras.
Oh.
And you go up to the customer service and go, Ed Quinn bought me this for Christmas. I already got it.
Yeah.
You have the receipt right here. Oh my God.
And they give you back the cash.
Luckily, yeah. I paid cash. Oh yeah.
And then I started not even using the receipt.
Wow.
Just taking an item off, bringing it up, and going, my mother got me this for Christmas. Can I get the money back? And they look at you a couple times, like all creepy. They call the manager over, then they'd sign off and they give you cash.
Wow.
And you're like, holy fuck. Yeah. And I'm getting taxed too. Like they're paying me tax. Yeah. I didn't pay. It was fucking creepy as shit. You do 10 years
pay,
for it.
But to pay rent.
That's what you had, you know, like I had to do something, sell weed, sell fucking pills, whatever needed to be done.
Like when you're like a comic like that, when you do those, you know, because like, you know, they say you're working on a special, you're working on being a headline or something. When you're just getting up and doing like 10 minutes, you're not getting paid anything. Like they don't even give you, they don't even tip, not a dime. They don't even like give you, they don't even take, cover your bar tab.
I remember in 1998, I did my taxes. I didn't send them in.
Yeah,
because I made $8,000, and I remember thinking $8,000 doing comedy.
Wow!
At least I'm halfway there. Like I'm like, at least I'm existing, and I'm doing what the fuck I want to do, and I don't have a boss.
Yeah,
you know, I'm driving to all these exotic places like Missoula, Montana.
Yeah,
I'm driving to fucking you know, Moscow, Idaho.
Yeah,
like you're going places. So,
but that's why the attrition rate's so high. I mean, that's the one thing that people don't realize is. You know, it's there's so many people that are blessed just to have been able to exist, just to have been able to sustain, just to have been able to keep things. Because you never look at Rogan. Rogan went from what? Like he was doing multicams to the next thing you know, he's like cage fighting commentator to now he's like one of the biggest commentator and maybe the biggest podcaster. It's just.
And do you know how that started?
No.
He just called Dana and volunteered one day.
No shit.
And flew himself to Vegas.
Wow.
Like the first three times.
Yeah.
Blew himself. He was just a fan.
He was a fan. And a participant, you know.
That's how easy it was.
Yeah. And how it was just like he just wanted to work. He just wanted to be a part of it.
He was on news radio. I still remember going to New York with him.
That's right. He was losing on news money. Radio at the time.
Yeah. When he first started going on the road, I went on the road with him one time. I think he was making $3,000.
Wow.
And he paid for a first class ticket for both of us.
Wow.
He lost money on the deal. Like right there, he lost
me. Yeah, exactly.
And then we did Caroline.
His business manager was like,
man. Yeah, he didn't give a fuck since day one.
Yeah.
Because he had news radio in the beginning. That's when they were paying on sitcoms. That's what actually you would start.
The reruns.
Yeah.
You got one of those, you could exist.
Oh.
One of the saddest things that ever happened to me when I was a starving actor, I got fired from the season finale of Frasier. And it wasn't just that I got paid for the episode. And the only reason I got Anthony LaPaglia was, I think he won an Emmy for his guest star role as Niles' brother. And he was so unbelievably funny. And we've been rehearsing the thing. And I had nothing. I'd set the guy up and he would do this one joke. And that was it. It was nothing.
Where is Anthony LaPaglia today?
Probably living on his without a trace money. Probably down in Australia, like making independent films and loving life.
He was a great guy.
Oh, no.
And funny as fuck.
No, no. But listen, he got me fired. He literally, it was the day before we're going to tape the season, 1 hour. It was the wedding episode of Frasier.
I just watched it.
That, basically, he comes storming in, and I basically say something to him, and he'd done it one way, like all through all the rehearsals and all this stuff. And so I was ready. It was funny, but I was ready for it. It was good. And he comes out and like right at like the big network or the studio run through or whatever it was, he just turned it on its ear. He did something completely different. And dude, it was like liver punch. It just got me. I didn't have a joke to hit. I didn't slow the scene down. I just broke. He clocked me. He like knocked me out. It was so funny. And they saw me just like get a little nervous.
A little chink in my arm.
Like I laughed.
Yeah.
Like I'm a little too like, you know, enamored with this dude's, the comedy. And I got hooked. And it was such a bummer because I remember like as an actor back then, you got paid for that episode, but then that thing reran. Oh. And it reran it all the time. You saw it yesterday. I mean, like, and those little checks, they start as a few thousand. And when they trickle down, they're just, I mean, I can save you. And I got.
So that doesn't happen no more?
Getting hooked?
No.
You get people getting fired all over. I know, that's how much people get fired every day.
I got fired from a Telemundo job.
Oh.
They fucking hated me. I went into I'm really good at auditioning. So this was right when you had to join SAG and AFTRA. This had to be 99, 98.
That was a racket.
And I went in for this Cuban show about a Cuban family, and I booked it as a doorman at the club. So I was going to recur.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I was like, oh, shit. I didn't know if Telemundo money was good. I didn't even give a fuck. I booked the job. And I went up there, and there were Cubans. And I started talking.
You were born in Cuba, right?
Yeah.
No, so you're legit.
But they looked at me, and they're like, excuse us. And I rehearsed the scene. I was way too green.
Oh, no.
And at lunchtime, when I came back, they pulled me aside. They fired me. They paid me.
Man.
They paid my after.
Yeah.
I got a check for like 116 because after was like 800 to join. So
yeah.
But here's the interesting thing: the star of that show went on to be like a big co-star on the George Lopez show on ABC.
Huh.
And when I moved to the Valley, I used to walk around North Hollywood Park, and I saw him one day, and he goes, excuse me. He goes, can I tell you something? He goes, I've always wanted to bump into you and apologize. He goes, it wasn't me that got you fired.
Oh, wow.
There's two types of Cubans. There's like jungle Cubans, like me.
Yeah.
Then there's decent Cubans. Okay. Even when I was a kid, I'd go to a Cuban girl's house, and their moms would say, don't bring him over.
He's
from the street.
Yeah.
I speak jungle Cuban.
Okay.
Even like when Yoel Romero was on with Rogan, I don't know that type of Cuban.
My best friend is Cuban. His name is Juan Carlos Saizabadoria.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, you know, yesterday, my sister fucking called me yesterday.
Oh, shit.
From Cuba.
Whoa.
Okay. I was on the phone with somebody, and I saw I didn't know the number, but I knew the number.
Yeah.
And then she sent me a fucking email. And when somebody calls me I listened to the message, and when she said, Jose Antonio, that's my real name.
Yeah.
It just creeps me the fuck out.
Really?
My family calls me that. They don't call Coco. They don't know about Joey Diaz. They don't know
Mad nothing. Flavor.
Nothing. They just that tone of Jose Antonio freaks me the fuck out.
Wow.
Because she says it just how my mother says it.
Oh, shit.
You know, like, Jose Antonio, call me back. And then she sent me a message, and I was like, fuck. So today I've been procrastinating calling her.
Yeah.
Like all day, because I invited her to fucking come here for a month. I got no passport. So I go, why don't you? She got stuck in Cuba.
Yeah.
I go, why don't you fucking come here for a month, meet your niece, and I'll take you to New York. I'll take you to mom's fucking cemetery. You can put flowers down. She goes, I'll never go to the United States. I go, what's this conversation? You know, I haven't seen her in 52 fucking years.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she got stuck.
Oh, fuck.
You know, and every family, you know, Quinn, one Irishman got stuck in your family. He told his brother he was coming right back.
Yeah,
I'm going over to check things out. Every family member, every generation has somebody who got stuck. Something happened, something didn't work out, and it was my sister. Wow. So whenever I talk to her, she has that. Like, no matter how bad I had it growing up, she had it a lot worse.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's my buddy's, you know, my buddy's parents or grandparents had lost everything in Cuba. And, you know, it's kind of amazing story. His grandfather fought against Franco. Lost, you know, in Spain, barely got out alive, got to Cuba. He saw Franco and his dudes walking down the street and was like, nope, you know, sent the family to Miami and then was going to, you know, see what happened. And sure enough, you know, ended up losing everything. But now his family's going back there right now and they're kind of doing the whole, all right, this government's falling apart. Give us back our restaurant, give us back our building, give us back. I mean, there's a lot of Cuban Americans now, I think, who are going back there and trying to figure out a way to get their property back. And it could be, I mean, that whole country could open up soon. It could be really interesting, man.
I don't know.
That
country's got a lot of fucking bad luck. Listen, they used to do a lot of creepy things there in the 50s and 40s.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when I read that article about the Superman, the guy with the big dick in Godfather 2, that two people actually went looking for him.
Really?
That scene from Godfather 2 that I talked about on the CISO special.
I went
to school with his grandson. His grandson used to always say, my grandfather had the biggest dick in Cuba. He was the guy from Godfather 2. And then he used to do the same type of sex show.
Wow.
It was a sex show.
Yeah.
And this article, if you ever get a chance, see if you get it. Superman, the Cuban, because I talked about it on Rogan. And people were like, the article was brilliant. It was two guys that went and looked at this guy.
This guy.
Wow. 50 years it took them.
Jeez.
And they got the origin. He died in Mexico.
Yeah.
But he was a lawnmower guy in the daytime.
Yeah.
And at night, he did sex shows. His dick was like 14 inches.
In Havana. In
Cuba.
Oh, my God.
He got paid $25 a night to do sex shows.
Good God.
And the people would get off the plane and go there. And it came out the same week that Richard Pryor's wife said that he fucked Marlon Brando. this article.
Oh, it's recent. This is just recent.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so this article just came out maybe two, three months ago.
Okay.
And then this article, it says, it goes, what Superman of Havana, look at it.
Oh, man.
He was famous beyond Cuba's... He was famous beyond Cuban shores for his mighty Indomitus, a symbol of an era of sex and sin. Wow. When the revolution came, he disappeared. Wow. That ain't no fake. That's real. That's why they call him Superman, Fredo Godfather 2. If you ever get, if you have 35 minutes, read this article.
Have you ever been back?
No. Wow. Read this fucking article. Wow. They fucking break it down. And my friend's grandmother told me.
Yeah.
George and my friend I grew up with, she goes, listen, as a little girl, I went to Cuba. Yeah. No bueno.
No.
That was just a sex haven. And when I was a kid, my mom died in 79.
Yeah.
And she'd always...
How old were you?
She died 16, but my mom would always go to me. Whenever I'd wear like a pink shirt, my mom would go, what are you, Rock Hudson? And I'd go, why do you think that? And she goes, what do I think? Nothing. Rock Hudson's gay. And I would go, no, really? What the fuck are you drinking? Rock Hudson ain't gay. And she'd say, when I was a little girl, Rock Hudson would come to Cuba and lock himself in a hotel room with young boys and shit. We used to go down there, like, you know, like when Michael Jackson took the baby out in the window and shook it, like, you know, in the performer. Yeah. He goes, he would just stay in the hotel. All these girls would go down there to see Rock Hudson. I thought there was lying. So if you read this article, it'll tell you that we were just a bunch of Americans are just filthy people. We were filthy.
Yeah.
We'd go to Cuba just to, fucking Kennedy went to Cuba and got laid. And you know who had this, who had the tape? The dirtiest guy was Santo Traficante because he actually flew this guy into Miami to do a sex show. Wow. They have it on tape. It's in black and white that, him fucking like
just like in the like just a private plane, get him into Miami,
get him into Miami, do a sex show and fly him back.
Wow.
But his main lover was Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
When Marlon Brando would go to Cuba, he would walk in with, it says in the article, he would walk in with two women and leave with Superman. Him and Superman were lovers. Wow. The place was called the Shanghai. They did it at a Chinese fucking restaurant. This is brilliant.
He also did private sex shows for wealthy Americans.
It's crazy. Oh, that is just crazy, man.
And you, like, who was telling us you got $25 a show?
It's in here.
Oh, okay.
It's all in this article. Wow. Superman of Havana. So you started as a music fucking dude. Like, you grew up...
I did. You know, I grew up in Berkeley, and, you know, I started... There was this music scene of the young, kind of like the young metalheads. It was the weirdest thing, but... There was this little guitar store called Secondhand Guitars on the corner of Rose and Grove in Berkeley. Grove is now Martin Luther King Boulevard. And there's a candy shop and this, I mean, a guitar store not much bigger than this booth right here. And there was this dude named Joe Satriani teaching guitar lesson to punk little kids. And I tell you, man, it was the weirdest thing because this is right in the heyday of, like, you know... Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads and, like, the, you know, the beginning of the whole sort of, like, flashy, shreddy metal stuff. And, you know, and there's Alex Skolnick and Steve Vai and Kurt Hammett and all these other guys. I think the guys from, like, Laz Rocket and Exodus and all these kind of speed metal bands and thrash metal bands were in there. And we would all just, you know, we were all, like, 13, 14, learning to play guitar. And we'd all just go, is our guitar teacher better than all of our heroes? Because it seemed like it. You could walk in, like, you know, God, I remember the day I asked Joe Satriani to teach me how to play Eruption. A part of his soul died. He played in this band. This is the funny thing. And I'm sure people who know him know this. But he played in this, like, kind of poppy pop trio called The Squares. And he sang, and it was like, it was this thing. And we'd go see him. Like, he'd do these free concerts, like at Zellerbach, you know, a square, and, you know, at the Berkeley Community
Park. What year was this?
82, 83, 84.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, dude, and like, he's playing and he's singing, and he's not like breaking into, it's like really like almost like, I know the Romantics played in the same thing. I want to say, like, he played a show, his little band opened for, like, the Romantics at a free, you know, at a park in Berkeley, you know, like, and, you know, so that kind of stuff. Like,
when you're walking in your sleep,
yeah.
I hear the feelings that you keep.
Exactly.
When you're talking in your sleep.
Good pull. And so, yeah, and so, like, I started playing, and, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, there's a bunch of little local bands that started to do pretty well. But it also, man, it looked like a tough gig. And I was pretty good at sports. And I was at this all-boys high school. And I was doing, I kept my grades up and I was playing in bands.
Oh, was that me? Yeah. Sorry about that. I thought I turned that off.
Happens,
And so I remember having like a conscious decision at one point about being like, cause like guys that were older than me, you know, they were graduating high school and they weren't going to college and they were like trying to make it. And there was, you know, like a band, Laz Rocket and Ruffians, and they were getting close and they were putting out records. And it just seemed almost like what you were talking about, like with the comedy thing. It's like, man, these guys, like, there was, you know, the bassist for a couple of them, man, would come by my house and he goes, your parents home? You know, can I just take a shower, dude? Can I just have a bowl of cereal? I mean, like starving, like homeless. Like, and his family lived up the street and I guess didn't want to have to do anything with him, you know? And it just, it was rough back then. It was hard back then. And like Joe Satriani's teaching me how to play guitar right there. You go, man, I don't know. He's got to sit. Yeah, he's got me walking in asking him, you know, I want to learn how to play, you know, Over the Hills and, you know, like, you know, or Zeppelin or some Ozzy Osbourne, you know, can I teach you how to play Crazy Train? And Satriani sitting there's like, oh, God damn. You know, and he can do it. He can like turn it on, you know, this, like listen to it for 2 seconds and be like, yeah, all right, here you go. This is how you do it. And so, you know, I don't know, man. I started really kind of focusing on sports and, you know, went to college and always kind of had it in the back of my back pocket. And when I first came to LA, I was studying acting and I couldn't, you know, I was working a little bit, getting some commercials, couldn't get an acting job, and started another band, got another band. We started getting some momentum and we were headlining the Sunset Strip, headlining the Whiskey and the Roxy and the Troubadour and stuff like that. But then again, you know, it's like, bands are hard. It's like a marriage between four dudes, and man, just things, it always implodes. It imploded 4 times, and the record deal imploded. And I don't know, man. Music is it's maybe one of the coolest things to, you know, of the arts. One of the coolest mediums to be a part of, to be a recording artist or to be a musician and get paid. But I think it might be the hardest. And now I don't know how you make any money. I don't know how you make a living. You know. After when Napster hit, I mean, everybody, it just blew the music, the whole music industry up. I mean, there was, you know, all of a sudden your records weren't worth anything. Your music wasn't working. It was given away for free on the internet. And so, I don't know, and some of the best musicians I ever saw just didn't quite make it for one reason
or
another. You
know what the scary thing is? While you were saying this, I was thinking, if I had a chance to do it again, I would have kept comedy as a hobby.
Really? Are you serious? Why is that?
I wanted to do something else.
Yeah.
Like, comedy is fun until you start adding numbers up and stuff.
Huh.
Once an art becomes a business, it's a thin line between love and hate at times. I like this, but then again, I just love going somewhere and being able to say what the fuck I want to say.
Yeah.
And not, it became a business.
You know, Joey, it's so counterintuitive to me because I'll tell you something. I have always, like that second time I started doing the music thing, I was living down in a little surf shack in Manhattan Beach, and I would ride my bike down and go to the little blues bar. Man, what the hell was it called? And all these, goddamn, what was the place called? It's closed now. And I'd go down and I would watch all these guitarists play. And in my mind, I've always thought, you know what I should have been doing back then? Going a block further to that Comedy Magic Club and like gone in on Monday nights or on the open mics and maybe try to kind of like, maybe that would have gotten me into the sitcom world or into the acting world. It would have been more of kind of the work that I'm doing now. And I kind of almost feel like, now why was I spending so, Cafe Boogaloo. I go down to Cafe Boogaloo and I watch all these, you know, national tour, and it would become more bluesy or some rock kind of stuff. But I mean, ripping musicians. And I feel like I was like, man, what was I doing? What was I, you know, why was I chasing that dream when I could have been down watching comics, watching all these guys come up, watching all these big entertainers, watching Leno every Sunday? I mean, I could have been down and put my time in down there, and because you're your own boss. You write your own stuff. You know, you like, you know, David Allen Greer is a really good friend of mine, and we'll be having conversations. I've seen his act 50 times and 60 times. I love it, and it changes all the time. But he and I will be having a conversation. He'll be telling me some stupid story about, you know, a girl or his car breaking down or something, and I'm laughing, and he's telling it to me, and then all of a sudden, man, like 2 nights later, we'll be at a club, and he'll be up in front of 1,000 people, and he's telling that. He was working that story because it made me laugh. He's like, I'm going to try that. And sometimes he'll get on stage and I'd watch him and it would be like, and it would work and it would become a part of his act. And then sometimes it wouldn't work, and he wasn't really going on, and he would veer back into, like, you know, into his regular act. But I don't know. I thought there was a freedom to that, like what I've seen what Dave has been able to do, what I've seen what you're able to do. I mean, what, 10 days? 10 days?
10 days.
10 days you take for now? 10 days. I mean, think about that. That's just amazing. And like, especially in this era now with like Netflix and HBO and Showtime and all these guys, you know, all these comics and all the guys that you're, you got this, like, you know, this podcast ecosystem and all of you, man. It's like, I've got to like literally spend, like, I got my own Twitter page just to sort of like keep where you guys, all your shows are
Did
popping
up. Did you see the lineup at this Comedy Store last night?
No.
It was something from another planet.
It's insane.
Like, it was something from another planet. Like, both rooms.
Yeah. No, like, who's
like,
there?
It was like, it started with Sebastian, D'Elia, Whitney, you know, Rogan, Bert Kreischer, I think Segura. I mean, it was just like, I looked at it and said, Jesus Christ. Excuse me. Jesus Christ, what is this?
See,
and I'm in the circle.
Yeah.
Like, that's even scarier. I'm sitting back there waiting to go up, and I'm like, my heart's pounding. You know, it's like I got earplugs on. I could hear my heart actually pushing like meat going.
Like, now, a night like that, is it just packed to the gills?
Packed to the gills last night.
Wow.
Packed to the gills. I saw the audience was a little bit, what Keechee said last night. Believe it or not, they were a little bit tight. And I opened up with a bit that usually gets a weird response. Nothing. I go, I got my hands full in front of me.
Interesting.
And I fucking went from there, and I flipped them. And I did something in Providence, Rhode Island that I thought would go over, and it ate a bag of dicks. But last night at the Comedy Store, it worked because I didn't say her name.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't say her name. See, this is the part of the journey where you learn that if I would have said, I said her name in Providence, Rhode Island, there were savages. I want to thank you again for coming out Thursday night.
Nice.
They were savages, and they even skidded a little bit when I said Rose McGowan.
Okay.
Last night, I said, I don't want my daughter to be raised in Hollywood and end up like this crazy chick who left her cocaine in a wallet on a plane. It got a laugh.
Okay.
You follow me? So just words.
Yeah.
The analogy of words is a weird understanding. You know, sometimes you say dick too much.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to narrow it down to one dick. You got to narrow it down to one pussy. You got to narrow it down to, you don't know that till you're at the 40-minute mark and you go, I'm talking about dick again.
Yeah.
So it's, I love the journey.
I'm looking at the passion right now. You got wheels spinning right now.
Yeah.
And so last night, so all these big names are there. How many of them are working new material, or like you, they have a special, or they just...
At the Comedy Store 10 years ago, you'd go down there on a Tuesday night and said, I could go up on stage and talk about Keechee and you and fucking Lee and not give a Frenchman's fuck.
Yeah.
But now, they're flying in from Australia. They're coming in from Canada, and they're coming here to do business, and they're driving up from Marina Del Rey because that's part of their fucking vacation. They figured the Comedy Store into their trip.
Wow.
I'm going to fucking Cali. I'm going to the Comedy Store. They buy a ticket. Yeah. They don't even care who's on the lineup. They just know that on Tuesday night, they're going to see Bill Burr. They might see Rogan. They're going to see Chris D'Elia, Sebastian. They buy tickets. Tuesday nights are always sold out. Done.
Wow.
Done.
Yeah.
And you walk in there, the electricity. I was trying to tell you that the best podcast I've ever listened to in my life was Steven Tyler on Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And I had to turn it off. I love music as much as you do. I take my music seriously.
Yeah.
He says he went to Muscle Shoals. He read his timeline. First of all, when he read his timeline, you know how we complain about how busy we are? He's 70.
Yeah.
You should have read his time. And he wrote everything down. Monday, had lunch with my kids in Venice. Got in a car, drove to San Diego, did a private show, got in a plane overnight to Orlando, went to Disneyland, did a show with Kelly Clarkson and that chick.
To the show, yeah.
Then from there, went to New York, hung out there for 3 days. You know, 70.
Yeah.
Always moving, met with a Buddhist monk. He hooked up with Duncan Trussell. Then he went to fucking Marshall Shoals and he goes, just to think, listen to these words. Just listen to these words. He goes, just to think that I was standing where little Richard was standing.
Wow.
He goes, I put my hand on the wall. And he goes, you could feel it. He goes, then it came to me that 5 feet from where I was standing, Greg Allman told his brother, Let's try that. Think of those words. Like, I had to turn it off. Tears were coming down my face. Like, that you're that deep in music.
Yeah.
He's that deep that he took, he said it. He goes, I was standing 5 feet from where fucking Greg Allman told his brother, yeah, let's try this lick. He goes, think of what I was feeling. That's the Comedy Store right now.
Yeah.
You go down and there's this weird fucking, you know, this weird, whatever the phenomenon.
It's an epicenter.
It's an epicenter. Yeah. It's, there's a light that shines on those stages and you could feel the pain in the walls. You know, it's been done in there for so long.
Yeah.
That you know, when it's like when you go to an old music venue, and the music is in there, you know.
That's true.
We did that thing in with Dean Del Rey, with the AC/DC. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
Dean Del Rey got the bass player. He got Rudy, the guy from Anthrax, the drummer from the Counting Crows.
No,
he got
a
bunch of people, and they did a tribute to AC/DC.
Oh no way!
And while we were down there, the guy gave us a tour.
Yeah.
Of who was in there.
Yeah.
And he goes, right here, you know, just think about it. Right here, Elvis stood here. Like, it was where somebody bought that place in the 50s. Oh, Dean Martin. Because it was close to his office.
Oh, yeah,
so Dean Martin would go over there and do comedy at night with fucking Jerry Lewis. I'm sitting there going, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
That no matter what you say in there, that spirit, that energy is still stuck against those fucking walls.
You know, it's so interesting you say that because I just got back last week. I was doing a movie in Cleveland. And I was like, you know, two things I got to see. I got to see a Cavs game. Got to see the Cavs close out the Toronto Raptors or whatever it was, which was electric, by the way. I mean, it was insane. I mean, I'm not even an NBA fan. Just kind of sitting there, like, looking around going,
yeah, this big, is it's big time.
Went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
And it was really kind of humbling and sobering. It's almost like when you...
It's like you go see like a, you go to a museum and you see like an old suit of armor that had been in battle. And it's like, in some way it looks a lot smaller and a lot bigger than you thought it was going to. You know, it's like you kind of see it and you're like, whoa, look at that. And then all of a sudden it's just like it has this aura about it. And just going through and seeing all the Bowie stuff and Prince's stuff. And every time you turn around, there is like, you know, it's one artist, but that artist represents so many stories and so many songs and so many emotions that he put out. It's heavy. It's heavy. And so it's, it was almost overwhelming. It was almost too much because it was just like, it was, you know, every step, it was a new artist. It was a new whole catalog of music, a whole, how many eras some of these, you know, musicians, seeing Jimi Hendrix's guitar, just seeing Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar and just sitting there, you know, especially the ones that were alive when I was, you know, a kid and then, you know, are gone now. And it just, I don't know, it's even more heavy.
Really. How long did you study with Joe Satriani for?
Probably like 3-4 years, maybe.
Is he still friendly with you?
Not at all. No idea. I'm sure if I walked up to him, if I met him and told him, he'd probably laugh. It was probably great. No, it was like this weird thing where, man, one day he was just gone. I think it was like he got on tour with Frank Zappa, maybe, or someone finally went, what, I'm taking this guy on tour with me. And then the minute, like, he kind of got out of, you know, Berkeley, maybe, or just he got in front of an audience, and a producer came along, and, you know, one minute he was there, next minute he was gone, and then, you know, a few years later, Surfing with the Alien came up, and we were just, I mean, we were just all so proud.
They've told me that right in Burbank was Randy Rhoads' mom, and him taught music.
I mean,
there was a little store in Burbank on the Magnolia. I don't know. I don't want to repeat it and say it's wrong.
I don't want to repeat it. Like, you can fact check absolutely everything I say, and I will not be offended if, you know, I'm 100%
wrong.
I heard
somebody came in here, I think it was Rudy, who said that. Yeah, he used to teach guitar lessons right down the corner.
When someone's that good, when someone's Randy Rhoads good, it's usually they love it so much that they teach. I mean, you know, I know so many actors that teach acting because it's just like it's something they're really good at and they're passionate about. And you also learn, so, you know, it's like anything, man. Like, you're really good at something, so now you're teaching someone from, you know, the basics. And as you're teaching them the basics, you're like, shit, I kind of forgot some of the basics. I should be actually paying attention to this. This is like the simple ABCs of anything, of any art, of any, you know, craft, of anything. And so, it wouldn't surprise me that someone like Randy did, because Randy was, he was next level good. You know, there's the savants, like a, you know, like a Jimi Hendrix or something, and then there's, you know, someone like Randy Rhoads who is just seems to be
He changed the game. Yeah. Like, he changed the game. Like, there was Van Halen, and Van Halen was fucking rocking.
Yeah, and Van Halen was a more of a savant, too. Yeah. I don't even know if he could read music. And the kind of thing.
I just saw them.
Yeah.
I just saw them about. Not saw them in person. I went to the weed store.
Yeah.
about maybe 18 months ago one day. I'm listening to Monday. Every Monday I listen to Sirius, that guy, Eddie Rock.
From the VH1 show.
Yeah, the VH1 show. I love that show.
Yeah, he's doing a top 20. I just got a tweet, like his podcast. Here we are. Just can't remember his name. He's doing a podcast like today of like his top 20.
I love him.
Love that.
On Monday, I get in the car. I listen to Eddie.
Eddie Truck.
And it's weird because Dean Del Rey is good friends with him. And Dean goes, if you go to New York, I'll get you on the show.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his.
Oh, nice.
I'm a fan that he could do a podcast by himself for 3 fucking hours. He's great.
He knows everything.
Oh, my God.
He ain't searching for no names either.
No
deep tracks.
And he takes calls and he has a guest. And
And by the way, I do love him. There's all these things like he loves old UFO. Which is something that that live album. Come on. And he loves Y&T too. I think he had Dave Medichetti on his show, dog, and stuff.
I forgot to tell you.
What?
That after so when I got on the plane, I'm superstitious.
Yeah.
It's Fell on Black. It's Sound of Winter.
Yeah.
Whatever that song by Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe twice.
Yeah.
Then I put Fell on Black Days maybe like 13 times.
Yeah.
What do you think the next song is?
Is it UFO?
UFO, Strangers in the Night.
Oh.
Fucking rock bottom.
Rock bottom. Well, I was gonna say
guitar on that, but also the beginning of Doctor.
Oh my God! Yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful things live I've ever heard in my life. Put it on, Lee.
Yeah,
Doctor live.
Yeah,
just the first four chords. I don't like what it becomes.
Yeah,
is it a video or just the audio?
Just whatever you want. Whatever's easiest for you. Right, just to listen to Doctor really live UFO
with Shankner.
Oh, his first solo album and the second one.
Yeah.
I was a kid when the second MSG, one came out.
Oh, my God.
And he toured last year.
Did he really?
Yeah, with all the three singers.
Oh,
with the three singers.
Yeah. Yeah, Rock Bottom's on my, like, workout.
Look how young. Look at him. No shirt. Didn't give a fuck.
Dude, he looks like, what, 17?
Fucking believable.
We have shoes.
Looking for
them heels.
Fucking tremendous.
Yeah,
tremendous. You know, he auditioned for Ozzy Osbourne.
No.
And Ozzy called him a fucking Nazi and he picked his guitar. You can turn it off, Lee. Ozzy fucking called him a Nazi.
Oh my God.
Put his guitar in his thing and ran the fuck out of the studio. But no, I listened to the beat. I listened to Rock Bottom maybe 5 or 6 times, especially the guitar solos. Yeah.
I like both. The live's good. There's something about the studio. It's so raw and clean.
It's raw.
The early first
it's
studio.
It's so weird how we've forgotten how to make live music.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've had this conversation.
How thin does that, because there's so much soul behind that and so much power, but I hear it immediately and like, those guitars aren't that saturated. There's not a lot of distortion. There's not like all these racks and all this stuff that they're running through. It's all not this incredibly big, even live, like produced and processed sound. It's just so dry and clean, and yet it's just drum and bass and guitar, and it's just, it doesn't need that much. And we forgot.
We forget. When you read Keith Richards' book, he has a whole chapter on that we thought about it so much, technology took it away. Like, we've forgotten how to make a live album.
Perfect example of a guitar tone that's like so classic and so impossible.
My God. Let me tell you something. Keith Richards on Some Girls.
Yeah.
The whole fucking album.
Yeah.
You know, Keith Richards on Black and Blue.
Yeah.
The whole fucking album.
Yep.
Keith Richards. Oh, somebody just gave me Exile. And I left it at the house. Oh, they just gave me Exile on Main Street Thursday in Providence.
Way. Oh, my God.
Some guy gave me Exile on Main Street. I want to thank the lady who fucking made, oh, my God, in New Jersey. They just handed me a bag with, it was like those circles. What do you call those cakes that people make in a circle?
Bun cake?
Like a bun cake.
Yeah.
Moist as fuck. It was like a, I don't know what it was. It was delicious. She made these white chocolate coconut oatmeal cookies.
Oof.
Me and Matt ate one apiece. I mean, they were fucking delicious. Then she made 2 marijuana cookies.
Uh-oh.
And I took a bite out of one of them. And I gave this because I can't have it. It was delicious. And I took your note. And I don't know what I did with your note. And I'm sorry. I'm not acknowledging you. But if you're listening, thank you for bringing me the fucking pound cake. Whatever it was out of this world. They bring me some great shit, these people at these shows. Now, you still go to an acting class?
You know, I don't as much as, but I would. That's the whole thing. I don't really go. I just, you know, life and just trying to keep my head above water and stuff. But I gotta say, sometimes I will go. I'll go back to class just because I like to watch it. I like to watch the process. I like to watch other actors. You know, the class I always went to, you know, you'd have all the class be working on one scene. So you and I be doing the same character. All three of us. You know, we would normally never audition maybe for the same thing, but now we're all working on, and maybe it's some, maybe it's your audition that you got going on, but the whole class is putting it up. And the girls are all different and they're putting it up. And you just watch people make different choices. And that to me, I don't know. It's like you were saying about, you know, too many dicks. You're always learning. You know, you're always learning what works, what doesn't work, going back to the basics. And so I'm just, I kind of exiled myself from, you know, the one thing that keeps me sane in this town is being kind of out of the town. And so I am down in the South Bay, down at the beach, and that just, you know, allows me to recharge my batteries and come up. But it's also, it's a long way to come up and sit in an acting class for, you know, 4 or 5 hours because everything's here.
Where did you go to originally when you moved down here?
The first acting teacher I had was a woman named Janet Alhanti, and she was fantastic. But man, I don't think I learned anything because it was like all this like repeating Meisner stuff. It was all this theory of acting. And then I get an audition, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I mean, it was crazy. Like, and we'd be doing these long scenes, all this theater stuff, you know? And like, then you get an audition for Melrose Place. What am I going to do? What the hell to do with this? There was a couple cats or like famous cats. I can't remember their name. I went to them. And then a woman named Leslie Kahn that I.
That's how I got that job with you.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Leslie Kahn.
Yeah,
Leslie Kahn. Yep. Contacted me because I did a couple privates with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, whatever I did. She was working with Louis Guzman when I booked his pilot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was pretty impressed. And sometimes I think about going to acting class.
But well, she, like her on. Yeah, we have nothing going on. And like her classes are like in, you know, you're sitting in like a living room. And like I said, like I want to watch 8 actors who I never, will never read for the same thing. I want to see them do, I either want to try and do their material and I want to see them do my material because I'll learn something from that. You know, it's watching young, you know, like I'll go into some of her younger classes, you know, like as a TA, I'm a terrible teacher. I'm like, I'm more of a, like a football coach. So like when I'm, you're doing it wrong, do it like this. And that's not the way you, you know, coach acting. But so I rather just sit and watch and like watch her develop students and watch students sort of like come into their own. And because that's the thing is you're always learning in this, all the businesses, you know, music as well, you know, it depends. I've been doing a bunch of like kind of unscripted stuff. I'm learning about that kind of stuff, like, you know, doing more almost like a hosting of shows. And so yeah, there's something really, to me at least, there's something really rewarding and like advantageous about popping into a class, you know, just going once a week, you know, and then working on some stuff. And just because you can get stuck, get in a rut, think you're nailing stuff, think you're doing great, and all of a sudden you go work with some people and, you know, everybody else is like, yeah, as cool as you think you are, you know kneecap you a little bit, you know, like, you know, get you to reset. And
well, you need that. Like last night I drove home with Bert, and I was, when I dropped Bert off, it's funny because it was 11:30, maybe 11:45, and I was, the energy from the store woke me up. It was like, wow. I went to Starbucks and got a fucking coffee.
Yeah.
And I looked at Bert and I gave him the old Joe Rogan line. I go, you really want to go home? he goes, where are we going to go? I go, I know a place. Where a woman will show you her pussy for $1. That's an old Joe Rogan joke from 1998.
Really?
Yeah. And he just looked at me, goes, $1? And I'm like, it's a joke. Get out of the fucking car. And then I called Joe, and I go, Joe. He goes, where are you? And I go, I know a place where you could see a woman's pussy for $1. And he started laughing on the phone. He goes, "When? How old is that fucking joke?" I go, 98.
Oh, my God. Hey,
that was one of your jokes on your first CD.
Oh, wow, my first CD. I was trying to think of
this. You got in trouble for going to a strip club or something.
Yeah.
And the guy said to him, what are you doing here? And he goes, I know a play. That was a joke from old Joe Rogan. So when I dropped Bert off, I just drove around and I was going to call Lee. Lee had just left the movies.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about calling Lee and having him meet me at Yum Yum Donuts to talk about comedy.
Yeah.
But I go, we're going to eat.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I need is fucking a bagel and a yum yum donut with fucking weed. Yeah, and now I food. Can't. Yeah, we're sitting there because we'll do it. Yum yum donuts is dangerous in North Hollywood. Yeah, I've thought about going in and getting a cup of coffee.
Yeah, no,
you can't
what?
Do it. Like, no, you can't do it. No, no, like, I've thought of going in there like at
11. You got a show in 10 days. No.
No. Yeah. I've thought of going in there like and going, because they're open 24 hours.
Yeah.
So you can go in there with your computer, get a cup of black coffee, and you can write till 2 and see people who are coming in.
Yeah.
Watch. That's the beauty about life.
Yeah.
You go to a coffee shop, I'm writing, I'm watching. Yeah. I'm hearing conversations, I'm listening to shit.
Sure, sure.
Just to get something different. But I don't trust Yum Yum Donuts. I don't want to be in there and get robbed. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's right off the fucking 101.
Yeah.
Remember, if I was going to rob a joint, I'm coked out. I know a donut shop where you can get a dollar.
And that on-ramp's right there.
Even if it's 35
Leave the car
bucks,
running.
Even if it's 35 bucks, I got half a gram coming to me. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be in that poor Mexican woman gets shot in front of me. I don't want to be in there fucking 2 in the morning. That's number one. Number
nights.
Two, I don't want to end up eating fucking 22 donuts.
Yeah.
If you sit with donuts, you're going to become one eventually.
Yes,
you're going to eat one.
Lay
That's
with,
real.
Lay with donuts,
I'm on
dude.
Weight Watchers. You know what I'm saying? That's tough to fucking sit there and smell those fresh cinnamon donuts. And they got a new apple one.
Only look at your eyes.
Only Mexicans just, could make it. Oh,
you just turned into a puppy dog.
Mexicans make an apple glazed donut over there that'll fucking rock with little chunks of apple in the middle. Only Mexicans could do that. And I tell Lee, like, really, 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 really white people go in there and ask questions.
Yeah.
And the lady don't know what the fuck is going on. Like, she has no idea the language.
Yeah.
They're like, what flavor? Chocolate. It could be strawberry. Yeah. She's like, chocolate. And she don't know. And how many calories in that? Chocolate. Is it gluten-free? Chocolate. Like, they hire, like, the women that cannot speak fucking no English.
Yeah.
It's a fucking great place. It's small. But my head was going to blow up last night because I just did 6 shows. I ate dick in one of those shows, Friday night late in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the Comedy Store, and my first 5 minutes eats a bag of dicks.
Yeah.
It's very,
grounding.
Grounding.
Yeah.
When you kill in Providence and New Jersey with a bit, and then you call in L.A. and you don't kill with that bit.
And what you want to be the kind of the sociopath who doesn't think about Jersey and doesn't think about the first 5 minutes. You want to be the person who only rides that high life. That person is just like, oh, I'm killing it. But like, I think, you know, like real artists or people who have been in the business a long time, it's almost a self-preservation thing. You're like, yeah. Don't hurt yourself, patting yourself on the back for the good ones. You know, the jobs you got or the auditions you killed that didn't go your way. It's the ones where you just go in and face plant. And those are the ones you just go, man, what?
What was I thinking?
What happened?
Well, I forced myself about 6-7 months ago to go to an open mic. Once or twice a week where you pay $5 and you do 5 minutes. And you sit with kids. And that has helped me.
Same thing we're just talking about.
That has helped me a lot because.
And are you watching the kids though?
I'm watching the kids.
Okay.
Studying them. Learning from them. Like the shit I used to do, didn't do.
Yeah.
Why his set went bad.
Yeah.
Where he went bad.
Yeah.
You know, the other night I watched a kid that said a brilliant line, but he stepped on it. He didn't let it settle in the room.
Yeah.
You fart, it comes out of your ass and it spreads.
Yeah.
A joke does the same thing.
Yeah.
You learn that through time. It's like a fine wine that the joke will catch. But if you step on it, it's not going to catch.
I learned that.
Acting 101.
Well, 101. Well, you know,
acting,
especially
is big
in,
with that.
In multicamp.
Yes.
Because in multicamp, that happened to me a couple of times where I like said something funny, it didn't quite hit, and all of a sudden it was just, I realized that, you know, you can get the audience to laugh. They won't laugh right away, but they'll let that joke sink for a minute, and all of a sudden, boom, and here it'll come. And you kind of
let them sink and do what Rodney did, give them permission to laugh. Rodney touched his tie, which gave you permission to laugh. Now it's a psychological fucking game. You know when to laugh.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
you know when to laugh. Bam.
Yeah.
You're going to laugh every time I do this with my neck. You're going to laugh. I'm training you to fucking laugh.
Yeah.
That's a psychological warfare. It becomes a warfare in your mind.
Yeah.
You figure out, and when I go to those open mics, I leave there more wired than when I go to the Comedy Store.
Why is that?
I've learned more from watching those kids.
Yeah.
I think that where actors, comics, anybody in a high profile position loses it, like Kanye West, and you're not grounded and you're never remembering where you're coming from.
Yeah.
You have to I don't go to that open mic and give advice. I don't tell kids what to do. Yeah. I shut my mouth. Mm-hmm. I watch. And if I become friendly with a guy and I see he's friendly and understanding, I will offer my advice to them. But I'm not there to coach nobody.
No.
I go there to watch them. And I know that I learn as much from them as they do from watching me.
Yeah.
And it also humbles me. It makes me remember that time in my career.
Yeah.
When you're frustrated.
Yeah.
Things aren't happening. You're working at Burger King. You're living in a closet.
But you haven't put in the hours yet.
And you haven't put in the hours, but you fucking could taste it.
Yeah.
You want it.
Yeah.
When I go to the fourth wall, I know one thing for sure. Those kids want what I have.
Yeah.
And I want what they have. That peace of mind. Yeah. That I want that Mick Jagger wrote, you know, when Jesus is doubt and pain.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem we have as actors and comics. What fills our void when we have those doubts and those pains, and like with music, what you had, you know, you've put it into perspective now.
Yeah, I did.
You really did.
I was almost scared of it. I was almost scared of it. I compartmentalized it in a weird way. I mean, if quitting something is something that's admirable, but I always, and like when the band, last band that I broke up, I had some really big A-list famous musicians and bands approach me to become their guitarist. Like I'm going on stage. I'm not some virtuoso. I'm not the best guy in the world, but the people that booked the shows at the Whiskey and the Roxy were like, you're good, and that you could be a big touring. And I was like, I don't know. Do I want to be like touring with some you know some big huge recording artist? But do I want to be that? Am I even good enough to
on the road with Zach Wilde in the bus?
No,
he doesn't take showers for 60 days.
Fuck Zach Wilde, I'd be
drinking with fucking Zach Wilde, and fucking Jack Daniels, and fucking playing riffs on a guitar.
See, now I'm wishing I did it.
I mean, I wish there's times, and you wish you were single. You wish you didn't have children, so you could really do that one more.
Yeah.
Lee, we're getting the car tour.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, Joey? We're getting the fucking car. You're driving. But it's snowing in Montana. I don't give a fuck. Do 60, you fuck. We got to be there by 8. You know.
Yeah.
In a hotel that smells like Hindu.
Yeah.
You know, the people who own it are Hindus. Yeah. It smells like curry.
Yeah.
You're up in your fucking room. You hear people fucking next door. There's no hot water. You know, your bed smells like cologne. You checked into the... You have no idea, Lee, when you're in a bed and you could smell the cologne and the hooker that fucked there an hour before you got into the room.
Ooh.
And you got to go do comedy at a bar. And there's a drinking contest before you go up.
Yeah. Oh.
Like before you go up on stage, there's 5 guys on stage doing drinking contests. I went to Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
You know, I love college basketball. I'm Cuban, American, college fucking basketball, college football is fucking great. I love all that shit. And I went to University of North Carolina maybe like in 99. And I walked in there with, like, I'm a regular at the Comedy Store. I'm going to rip this fucking room apart.
Yeah.
And they were having a drinking contest. And the guy comes up to me, like a guy pukes. And they're like, you're following the drinking contest. Pukey. 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're on. And I went up there. And I was so rattled by the drinking contest that I just ate a bag of dicks. Like, that's experience. Yeah. That's the journey.
But but the thing that you do choose, you focus, mainly on comedy, and then I focus mainly on acting. And then I think there is really something to, everybody's always about think positive imagine your vision quest board, whatever the hell it is, and only be positive. Sometimes I think it's good to sort of, as an artist, you want to be able to sort of, straddle the side of the light and darkness. And, when things are going good, it's really easy to just be sort of confident and move forward. But every once in a while, something goes bad. It's good to kind of check yourself. It's good to kind of examine that. And like, that's the thing about comedians, I think, is that, like you were saying, there was that lineup last night. And I bet you were all there, though, at different points. Like, someone just finished their special. And someone's, working on new material that they're going to do. You've got 10 days. It's D-Day for you. It's like, someone else got some huge corporate gig and they're trying to like do something clean. And you guys are all up there working on material for a different reason, but all working, and all learning and all like and focused. And for most of my life, I just went to comedy
clubs and just, I didn't understand the what was going on. I didn't see the matrix of it. I just was like, oh, these guys are good. They're telling jokes. Cool. And it wasn't until I met David and saw what went into it and saw how, like, he'd be on a show, his show get canceled, he had a mortgage, he had some alimony. He was on the road. He's on the road. You know, there was a Wayans brothers that you know, told him to start doing that. And how he did that and how he nurtured it and how he respected it. And then, like, you know, it kind of through the podcast world that you just started to learn so, you know, intimately about all of these comics. Not, you know, not Bob Hope and not Eddie Murphy and not the biggest top of the top, but it's like all these guys who were like the grinders and the main, you know, the main lifeblood of the comedy scene right now. And you can learn so much about them listening to comedy, you know, listening to podcasts and what they do and what the grind is. I don't know. It fascinates me. And it's and I think it's something that you can also sort of take to your everyday life, no matter what you do. You know, that kind of thing of always be working.
This is general. When I talk about comedy, I could be talking about plumbing.
Yeah, 100%.
I could be talking about drywalling. I could be talking about electrical work, roofing. I could be talking about, well, I can't compare it to like engineering. Or something like that, because I don't really know. That's 4 years of college.
Yeah, but if we went to college 30 years ago, that's all gone. Like everything changing. Everything as well. Changed. Everything's evolving. Like here in tech, every 5 minutes ago, dude, it's old news, old business. And so you've always got to be opening yourself up to that. And you know, and that's I don't know, man. It's I think it's just, well, I can't wait for 10 days.
That's crazy that you got fired. Like. We all get fired. Is like, I almost got fired from a commercial because I went off on the director, but I had every right to. He was just, you know, I get there, I can see the hat with the feather, and the tattoo with the t-shirt rolled up. I already know, you know, if you get to a set and you know who the director is by the wardrobe, you got a problem.
Yeah,
you know, and it started getting like that. You know,
yeah.
I did one show. The chick was a chubby lesbian with a French poodle. You know, we're directing here. Leave the French poodle at the fucking house with the assistant.
Yeah,
and she's a half a lesbian, and nobody knows what the fuck is going on. It's too much drama for Uncle Joey. I just want to shoot a fucking movie with Sam Raimi with the same suit on every day.
Yeah,
eccentric.
You know. Yeah, yeah.
I don't need. That's why I don't. Sometimes I have a great time acting, and sometimes it's a weird time.
Oh, like,
sometimes.
God, yeah.
It's like, what the fuck am I doing here? Sometimes I like sitcoms a lot because you're in and out.
Yeah, and show night, man. That's show business to me. That's the thing I love about it, and that's what a lot of actors don't like about it. Is it's like all of a sudden. I mean, I love it because you rehearse all week and everybody tinkers with the thing.
I love shooting a live show and the audience is in the audience.
Well, yeah, because you're used to it.
I haven't done it in 15 years.
Oh, really? Wow. Shoot.
Like, even when I shot Superior Donuts, they shot me on tape.
Okay.
They shot Friday, but they go, we're just going to shoot you on tape.
On Thursday, yeah.
And then the last two, have been just closed sets. And I did I'm Dying Up Here, closed set.
Closed set. Oh, interesting.
But for years, I would book pilots for Fox.
Yeah.
And Friday was a live performance, and I'd fucking kill.
Yeah.
I'd kill.
Of course you would.
And I'd improvise and really piss the fucking actors off. They would crack. They would crack. I got purposely fired from Louis Guzman. Like, the show got picked up.
No,
they were like, you're in no danger.
Oh, man.
You were a problem on the set. And I wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
He said that he wanted me to say a word that wouldn't be said in New York City.
Yeah.
That one Puerto Rican would not say the other. It was a Mexican word. So I corrected the fucking director. I go, listen, not for nothing. Puerto Ricans don't use these words.
Yeah.
He was like, you're going to use what the fucking line says.
Yeah.
The way he responded to me, like, really? Like, somebody would be open.
Yeah.
But the way he responded to me, I was like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
So I did the thing anyway. And years later, I seen him at the store and he came over and apologized.
Oh. That's nice.
Yeah, like I saw him at the comedy store.
Yeah. Sometimes, man, the fog of war, people get like, you know, I've been on so many sets and, you know, it's crazy and people are having, you know, nervous breakdowns and people are under tons of pressure and people weighing over their head. And, you know, and then, like, you know, you get through it and you make it and it's fine. And then, you know, years later, like you say, you'll be like at, you know, Trader Joe's or something, or you'll come in and you'll see somebody and they'll be like, man, I'm so sorry. You know, I was just a mess. I got letters from like people who are just like, oh, it was a mess and I was going through a bunch of stuff and, you know, you were totally right and I didn't mean to like overstep or be like this. And, you know, I'm just like, I don't know. We got it. We made it.
I remember when I did the longest show, the director hated me.
Really?
Like from the second week.
No way.
Because I went to Adam.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know,
yeah,
on those yeah, type yeah, of movies.
Yeah, the politics.
On those type of movies, you're the director, but Kichi's the boss.
Yeah.
So yeah. You're telling me to do something, and the boss is telling me to do something. I got to do yeah. what the boss told me. I'm yeah. sorry. So yeah. I would do what the boss told me, and he would get mad, so we clashed. And then at the... And I loved him. I yeah. loved him and his wife. And then yeah. at the premiere, yeah. he told me, he goes, you are not my first choice.
Wow.
At the premiere, and I was like, okay, you know, you yeah. felt you had to say that. You needed three beers. Yeah. So fucking 10 years later, I get an audition. And I IMDb it.
Yeah.
And I go, God damn it. He's the fucking director.
Wow.
And I go, I'm going to call and cancel.
Yeah.
And I go, you know what? No, you're not. It's right here in Warner Brothers. Just go and do your best. And yeah. if he sees and he don't want you. And when I walked in, I knew the casting director, the Puerto Rican guy.
Yeah.
I forget what his name is. And yeah. I said something to him. And I go, do me a favor. If you talk to Peter, tell him I'm sorry. They got clean off drugs. I don't do drugs no more.
Yeah.
He goes, what are you talking about? He's the one that requested you.
See?
So I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. So, things change.
And sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's just the business too. Like, look, there's been twice I've been fired. There was another show that was kind of a train wreck called Coupling. And I walked in and walked out. And before I got to the car, my phone was ringing. I'd booked the job. Some half hour, you know, the dude, I can't remember what the role was. And I got to the table read though. And they sat down and they saw it. And they're like, oh, he's just too, I wasn't cheesy. There was like, you know, there was things that I couldn't correct. She wasn't cheesy enough. They were thinking more of like a cheesy blonde guy. I had chemistry with the girl. I wasn't supposed to have chemistry with her. And it was just a whole, I was just wrong. But they needed to find a dude. So they kept me for the whole, so you start on like a Monday Friday, I get the job. Monday, I'm there at the table read. Monday, they want to get rid of me, but they need someone to come in. So Tuesday, Wednesday, it's like Thursday, and we're going through the whole thing. And like, I could feel the director was kind of like trying to get me to make different choices, which I totally was. And all of a sudden, man, it was like this, like someone comes up and goes, hey, Ed, phone's for you. And I'm like, what? And everybody's gone. And it was the set phone on the goddamn stage. And I mean, cockroaches, like there's nobody left on the entire stage. First, there was 100 people and no one's there. There's this one phone. I walk back in this little booth. I'm like, hello? It's my manager. She's like, hi, Ed. I'm like, oh, did I get fired? She's like, yeah. I'm like, God damn it. Hang up the phone, walk out. And one actor standing out there, and it's a guy named Colin Ferguson. And he walks me to my dressing room and he goes, dude, this show's been a mess. By the way, this episode never even aired. That's how the show was like really coming apart, it seems. Walk me there, walk me back, nicest guy ever. Director called later this afternoon. He just was like, buddy, I could tell you were trying to like get me to do different stuff and stuff. And he goes, and you were doing it. It's just like, you're too big, you're too handsome, and you're just like, we're wrong for the role. You blew them away in the room. Like, they all excited for you. You just don't work for the role, which was all fine. Show never even aired, so I wouldn't have gotten any paid. And then Colin Ferguson turns out to be the lead of Eureka. Like a year later, he and I are on that series, and for years now we're best friends and stuff. We always can look back and laugh on it. But it was that kind of thing. So it was like the whole thing. It didn't really matter in the end. In fact, it's funny. I'll never forget that moment of like having a PA like say, "It was a phone call for you." I'm like, "Oh, for me? Where did everybody go?"
I had an audition at Fox one day for that show on CBS.
Yeah.
Your mother.
How I Met Your Mother. There we go.
I had a little hole. Like right here,
in your pants.
Like nothing. You couldn't see nothing. It was a hole in the seam of the jean,
mm-hmm.
like a little tiny hole.
Yeah,
something had happened.
Yeah.
It was too late. I was in the car already on Pico.
Yeah,
so the casting people were not going to see the hole. There was no way they were going to see the hole.
Yeah,
at the time I didn't wear underwear. I'm like, I'm not wearing underwear. It's fucking 100 degrees, right?
Uh-oh.
So I walk into How I Met Your Mother.
Here comes the
yard bark. It's a producer session, right? This is a fucking true story. It's a producer session. They're looking for somebody, but they don't know who they're looking for.
Yeah.
My manager at the time said, just go in there and rock their world. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
Just go in there and rock their world.
Yeah.
So it was a scene where I was sitting down and I have to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened, dog. There's three women in the room and a gay guy.
No.
And I'm sitting down and I get up and the pant got caught. Like, this could only happen to me. The pant got caught in something. And
this
as I got up, it just went and it ripped. You heard it go like the jean just ripped or the corduroy, whatever the fuck I had on ripped. And I stood up and my ball was hanging. And I looked at all of them and I go, you like the Cuban egg roll? And they fucking fell out. They fell out. And then I just ran with it. I just ran with it after that. You like the Cuban egg roll? I'm sorry. This was way before Harvey Weinstein. This is 12 years ago. I'm going off about my nut. I didn't have underwear. My wife didn't do the laundry. I just went off.
Yeah.
They were dying.
Yeah.
I remember them going, thank you for coming in. And I was halfway to my car. And my agent calls me, goes, bro, go back. You didn't read for them.
Oh, my God.
We were in there talking about the rip in the pan for so long. They go, go back.
My God.
I went back, I read, they're like, thank you for coming back. You cracked this up. So they were smitten. Yeah. They gave me the job. They were like, nice. Right. By the time I put the key in,
Phone's
the call ringing. Came in.
Yeah, yeah. Go to your fitting.
Go to your fitting, blah, blah, blah. And the next day I went in there and the director hated me. Like when he looked at me, I could just see his face just go, not this guy. And if you watch the episode today, I'm basically an extra. They gave me like $2,300.
Yeah,
to be an extra. They cut my line out, and they made me sit there. And I mean, I was in and out of there. Like that's how much they hated me.
Yeah, but then you'll probably see that director again. He'll request you. Go, that guy's perfect. That guy's great. It's like everybody's so kind of compartmentalized. And that's one thing. That's one thing to learn. And one thing, you know, you're talking to like young actors. Or you're talking to, you know, people. It's so you can't. You should. Personalize some stuff, and you should, like, you have a bad audition or you know eat a bag of dicks on your first 5 minutes or whatever you said, you should think about that, and that's because that's part of your craft and part of your responsibility as an artist and how you grow. You also got to realize, you know, when something like, you know, the director doesn't like you or just didn't go well or they cut all your lines. I have like 400 hours of stuff that I've shot that's been cut out of movies and TV shows and stuff, and stuff that you didn't get wasn't your fault. It was like, yeah, dude, you weren't right for the role. It didn't work. Like, this is what we got. And we were trying to like put you in. And it was just like, what's this fucking water bottle doing here? Get out of here. And so it just is that kind of thing. And so, you know, like, I love that story that one director, like, he requested you to come back. You thought he hated you from before.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden he's like, I hate you for that job.
10 years later.
Yeah. Straight up hate you for that job.
But we talked about it.
Yeah.
I put him on the podcast.
Oh, nice.
And
nice.
We talked about, you know, what happened. He goes, there was so much going on.
Yeah.
He goes, I've never really worked for Adam since then, you know.
Yeah.
And there's just too much going on. Yeah. It's just too much.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Like, before, I didn't mean it. As a comic, I really loved the art. Yeah. I could teach it. Yeah. I love it. I'm doing 27 years. I was all the way in the belly. I didn't put it together for the first 2 years.
Yeah.
My first 2 years as a comedian, I did not put it together until I saw John Leguizamo do an open mic.
Interesting.
And then it all, so you got to work.
Yeah.
You know, Leguizamo was at a place with 8 people, one guy getting a hand job under the table. It's 1:30 in the morning in the Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And Leguizamo thought he was in Madison Square Garden. It was the most brilliant thing I had ever seen. Like, So he put it together for me. I got on a plane, went to Colorado, and just went.
Yeah, yeah.
Read books on it, did the workbooks, and just, you know, and I had a twist to it because I was going through a divorce, and I would have to drop my daughter off on Wednesdays and Sundays, and it was so painful.
Yeah.
So I would have a joint in the ashtray, and as soon as I would drop her off, I'd get back in the car, and I'd force myself. Even though I was crying and I'd smoked that joint, I'd force myself to go do comedy.
Wow.
You have no idea what it's like to walk into a place, wipe your tears as you're walking into the place, and have to be funny 15 minutes later. I did it on purpose. Like, I forced myself that on Wednesdays and Sundays, I used to drive to Arvada at the time. It was a line dancing class from 7 to 8, and the comedy started at 8 for 4 people.
Yeah.
You know, and here I am, broken inside, angry, pissed, broke, hungry. You know, the bar gave you a drink ticket and you could cash it in for like a sandwich. Like, listen, I don't want a drink, but can I get an order of fries?
Yeah.
Like that type of shit, where you just eat fries, you know, for the night. But trust me, those fries are good like a motherfucker. Yeah. You put salt on each one. Like, each one, you pick it up and you're like, you put ketchup on it.
Ketchup, yeah, like the Spanish and the mustard, just to get a little more.
You load them up, baby.
A couple more carbs in there.
And you sit there. Like, you know, even as an actor, a musician, you always, what do you do when you get that doubt? Like, when I told Lee that one day you're going to be sitting in a comedy room and somebody's going to fall off the stage or... Yeah. and you every it's like every 6 months comes the moment of truth where you have to actually stop and look at yourself in the mirror and go, am I getting anywhere with this? And be as brutally honest with yourself. Like, there's no time frame. You committed to this.
Yeah.
Now you're going to take the ride. You know, I've seen many people come and go, and they quit. And I'm not mad at them for quitting.
No.
This is a hard...
Leslie Kahn used to give parties to people who quit. If you quit acting and you're in a class, you have a pizza party. Literally, like, congratulations. You got the fuck out. Like, almost like getting, like graduating from the program or something. Like, it was, like, literally, like, good job.
When was the last time you saw Leslie?
Oh, I talked to her all the time. She's one of my dear friends.
Send her hello.
I will, for sure. I will, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
I used to have a crush on her.
Oh, everybody does.
I mean, everybody has a crush on her.
Yeah, I mean, she's the queen, and she's just the sweetest thing on the planet, and she's probably...
Does she still live at the place all week and then drives home to her husband on the weekend? Like, fucking crazy.
Crazy. No, you know what?
It's crazy.
She does. By the way, here's, like, interesting side story. I think that her bedroom at the place is all furnished by stuff that I brought back. I called her from Indonesia. I was in Indonesia surfing, got hurt, hyperextended my knee, tore half my foot off, was in too much pain to fly home. But so I was just there in Bali with a cane and limping around. But I just bought a house, and the house was empty, and I couldn't afford to put anything in it. But now all this unbelievable furniture that was so cheap, and like to buy, you buy all this furniture and you'd ship it. And it would still be like a quarter of the price of what it would cost if you went down like on Melrose and bought all this beautiful Balinese crap. I called her. I go, I'm trying to fill a shipping container. She's like, fill it up. So her whole bed is like canopy beds. You open it. It was like that crazy like acting school. And you open up like this Balinese palace in this one room.
Does she still have it like that?
Yeah. So, but then like her and her husband, like they lived way out. They moved closer to town now. They live like not as far away. So it looks like she can go home at night now too. So I don't
know. But it's still the way it was, exactly. All day acting.
All dude, like
the same place?
Same place. 17 freaking classrooms. I think it's bigger now, man. 17 classrooms going full speed. It's just mayhem. Yeah, yeah. And like so many young actors, so many actors have been able to like you were talking about, how do you make the ends meet? Like right now, it's May and nobody got a pilot. Everybody's freaking out. How you can pay your mortgage? How you can do this? Everybody teaching classes, everybody working around, you know, coaching, everybody. There's it's such a good ecosystem for actors learning, like, you know, dude, I didn't even get an audition. I need a new manager. Who's your manager? Do you know anybody? Your agent? And so it's just like, you know, the best thing that I think that she created was a community for people to really be able to just figure out what's going on, figure out the business, get a breath, you know, like it's all comes at you so fast. And I mean, and it's Hollywood, it's crazy. You're not going to learn anything going and hanging out at the Ivy or getting drunk on some club, you know, on Ivar or some bullshit. You got to like talk to people who are working and understand it. And that's the kind of thing, like, you know, like those kids you're talking about at the Comedy Store, they don't know what the hell's going on. They want to be a comic. They're paying $5 to do 5 minutes. That's all they know about the business. And they, you know, once they get, you know, it's a Wizard of Oz.
You dude. Want it so bad.
You want it so bad.
But, you want it so bad.
And, but you just see, like, you know, you see Rogan on a special, but you don't understand what Rogan, you know, what it took to get from doing paying for 5 minutes to getting to that.
Yeah, no. Mayhem. People have. I always thought that you just went into a room and talked. Like when I saw comedians, like when I would watch Dave Brenner, I figured that he just went somewhere. And they just gave him a microphone and he did a new hour. Like, I thought it was that easy.
Yeah.
Until you get on stage.
Yeah.
And then you're like, it's not, a, you know, like you're fucking around at work being funny by the water cooler.
Not the same thing.
Then you get on stage and it's a big difference. Now you have to adjust that comedy. Mm-hmm. And that's a journey, just learning that. Yeah. Like, before, I didn't mean it that way. I love doing comedy. I wouldn't do anything else. It's funny that mine and Rogan is a complete different animal than I am. Rogan's a decent individual, never got in trouble with the law. But our love is because when we sit together and talk about comedy, it's a science. We have it down to a science. I learn from him. He learns from me. I just, again, I don't like all the shit that comes with it. I don't I don't want this to be like Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
I open up for a few strippers. We get a bag of heroin. We go back to the hotel. We shoot some heroin. We sleep. And we wake up at 2 in the afternoon and we go get a freshly squeezed orange juice and a donut. When I read Ladies and Gentlemen, Lenny Bruce, that's what I thought this was going to be like.
Yeah.
And it was completely different. I love the Comedy Store. I love what it represents. Mm-hmm. I love everything about it.
Yeah.
The only thing I complain I have is the numbers.
Art meets commerce, man. Art meets commerce.
That's what drives
me. I mean, we were talking
crazy
about Led Zeppelin early. I mean, how many of those guys ended up so broke and lost all their money? Who was it? Just who's the guitarist from, is it Glenn Tipton from
Judas Priest?
Judas Priest has got Alzheimer's. He's having to sell off his rights to the royalties to the music that he has because he got invested in some golf course and went belly up and lost everything. And like, and he needs medical care now. And I mean, this is Judas Priest. I mean, this is like, those guys have been touring since I was in diapers.
I saw him in 1980, Judas Priest. British Steel, five nights at the Palladium,
the law.
A fucking theater in New York. And I think that was when Def Leppard opened for them. I think it was Def Leppard.
That was early Def Leppard.
Yeah.
On Through the Night, High and Dry. Yeah. When they like sounded like AC/DC, before they sounded like, before they went Poison.
I saw AC/DC with Ted Nugent, with Bon Scott at the Garden on Weekend Warriors tour and Highway to Hell tour.
I saw the Highway to Hell tour. I think it was a Day on the Green or something. Like, I was a kid. I got to see Bon Scott. That's a great thing.
Tremendous. Yeah. Last night and today I went to Freeze.
Yeah.
At cryotherapy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had him put on Squealer.
How long are you in there for?
3 minutes and 15 seconds.
That's it. And do you feel?
Oh yeah.
Seriously.
Oh, it feels tremendous. I go in there, throw punches, knees. I stretch my back. I throw kicks. I do jumping jacks. 3 minutes. You breathe. Just focus on your breathing. All you do is focus on your breathing.
Never done it.
But do bend downs.
Yeah.
Don't you jump up in the air. But the most important thing is it's the tube and fresh oxygen.
Yeah.
So your breathing goes back to being natural.
Hmm.
And if you don't breathe like that, you're going to lose it because you're going to run out of cardio. You got to move for 3 minutes.
Oh,
you're throwing
really?
Hooks. You're ducking punches. You're getting chased by 8 Puerto Ricans. You know what I'm saying? You're just moving in there 3 minutes. So if you lose your breath, you're going to have to open that door and go out.
Wow.
You're going to have like a panic attack. Yeah. So it's helped you because it makes, that, what's that thing? Flight or fight response?
Fight or flight response.
It makes that shit, keep, a lot of people
get a lot, they freak out. They snap.
They snap. So you got to go in there, breathe, watch the guy, and listen to music. I go in there, I got 5 or 6 songs. I got, ready for this one?
Yeah.
Slaves and Bulldozers by fucking Bad Motorfinger.
Absolutely.
I go in there one time. I played Rhinoceros. Is that
it? Yeah. Rhinoceros or something. How the hell you skipped that song?
I play.
That's one of their songs. It's like 4/7 time or 6/7 time. I think it's a sick.
Oh.
That Matt Cameron, their drummer, is a beast.
And when I lived in Seattle, somebody from that band had a bar. I think the bass player or the drum, and he played that day. Like, he hung out every night at the bar. Like, if you went to the bar, I never saw him.
That was a scene, man. That was a scene. And I could just, every once in a while, you sit there and you go, Cornell, Kurt, and Lane, all gone. They're all gone.
And our boy is still fucking making music. The drummer, the prodigy, still going to the mall, getting chased by TMZ.
Foo Fighters.
There's a pizza place. Does he own that, Lee?
I don't know. What
did you see the pizza place? It's his picture.
Yeah, Dave Grohl.
On fucking River, right where the old Italian place used to be. There's a pizza place that opened, and that's his neighborhood. He used to go eat at a Mexican joint, Tony's, Big Tony's.
It could be.
And people, the lady told me, he goes, he would come here every day.
Yeah.
And one day, people would knock on the glass and wave at him. We didn't know who the fuck he was. It's Dave Grohl, eating at the Valley.
Some dirtbag musician.
And then one day, I go to that mall up here, whatever's up here, Lee.
Right, the Sherman Oaks Gallery?
Right up here.
Yeah.
And I bump into Eddie Bravo, and he goes, the last time I was here, I saw Dave Grohl getting chased by TMZ. And not 5 minutes, you hear, fuck you! And it's Dave Grohl running with his daughter in the mall, getting chased.
Man,
and then I saw him an hour later in like a luggage store with her.
Yeah.
You know, like just fucking hanging out.
Yeah.
But he comes out like that.
Eddie Vedder made it. Maybe because Eddie Vedder, I don't know, it's just a weird, every once in a while you start like talking about all those Seattle bands and you realize that, man, all those singers are gone.
Let me give some shout outs and we'll get you out of here.
All right.
I want to give a shout out to Mishy, who came down last night. My man Gino at Speedweed, 47 Ronin, Adam Hughes, Kyle Dempsey, my man Bob Lalingus. Tell your mother I said happy birthday. Christoph Wankus and Sketchy Situation Podcast. I will be at the motherfucking taping the special on the 4th, but I'll also be at Calusa Casino on June 17th. That's my only date in June. I'm relaxing. I'm going to put together the fucking package for the book.
I love it.
So I got 2 months to put a book together.
It's been too long, my friend.
Let me ask you something. What do you got coming out? You got, because you said you were finishing up a show.
Yeah, doing a movie. Like we were talking about, actors being scared. So the pilot I did didn't go. Just to finish up this little movie. I've been doing a bunch of stuff with Discovery and Discovery Communications bought Travel. So I've already shot a pilot for them, a history show that I'm really proud of, kind of an unsung heroes of history. We did a great pilot. I don't know if or when it's going to air. Or what network it'll air on. I hope, you know, it's supposed to be for Travel, but Travel's going through a whole big shakeup right now. And then I'm executive producing Cousteau's Ocean Mysteries, actually. The Cousteau's, Jean-Michel, Philippe, and Celine. We're going science discovery. We're doing 10 episodes. Gonna go put them in some boats and go look for some stuff.
I grew up on Jacques Cousteau.
Everybody did, dude. First family of the sea.
That motherfucker.
First family.
Balls of steel.
Yeah, and we're sending his son and his grandchildren back out there and going to go make them look for some more.
He was fighting sharks years ago.
They're fearless. They're crazy. They think I'm jumping off the boat with them. I'm like, I'll surf with sharks, but I'm not going to go swim down like in their neighborhood.
Those people that walk the tightrope? The Walencas?
Yeah.
They're like the Walencas of the ocean, people. Exactly. They don't give a fuck.
No, they're all about curiosity. They're all about... They're really tip of the spear when it comes to environmental aspects. So we'll be tying in sort of, you know, how the science allows us to, like, you know, explore the sea in different ways, and also how we can, you know, keep preserving our oceans. So,
Ed Quinn, it was a pleasure seeing you.
It's great to see you, my friend.
When is the new season of One Day at a Time premiere?
They're writing it right now, so that's.
When do you go back to work on
that? I have no idea if I'm going back. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's all good.
Are you excited about Chicago UFC? Are you still a UFC guy?
Oh, man, huge UFC guy. Yeah.
What fight are you most waiting for right now?
I want to see what happens. Well, God, what am I, you know, I gotta say, I mean, like, DC moving back up to heavyweight is because people forget that he won the Strikeforce Grand Prix at heavyweight. You know, he could be a beast at heavyweight. If he goes, but Stipe, I mean, Stipe's been fighting killers. I mean, he's been fighting savages, and he's got
the heart of a fucking
And he's people don't quite give him the respect, I think, that he deserves. And you know, and now after that last performance by Amanda Nunes, I would love to see her step up. Someone's got to challenge Cyborg.
Yeah, no, that.
And so I don't know, but I mean, so you know, the UFC is just it never ends. It's always fascinating. Just name a division, you and I could just take the top 10.
On June 9th, we're doing a live thing here, a stream for Romero against Whitaker.
Oh, that's another one.
You're welcome to come up and commentate with me. And
that would be fantastic.
We'll do it right here. We'll play
sort
it
sort of like a live.
Fans can watch it. Yeah,
a fight companion. Oh, perfect.
But this has stats. They do it up. Matt Militello does it up really good.
It's gonna be on sportsbook.tv, and we're also gonna have it at other places. But that's gonna be the best experience. It'll have all the graphics.
So that's stats. What we're doing June 9th. Whatever time the UFC starts, we will be there, motherfuckers.
Nice.
So I want to thank you again for coming up. I want to thank my girl Kishi for always inspiring. The Christ Killer, and I'll see you motherfuckers Memorial Day, ready to go, tip-top Magoo. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. I love you cocksuckers. I'll see you Memorial Day. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Kick that mule, Lee.